Welcome to The Compliance Files, brought to you by Compliance Institute. The Compliance Files is a unique podcast series giving you access to industry insights and key perspectives on how the evolving regulatory landscape is driving change, bringing challenge and opportunity for compliance professionals everywhere.
Hello, and welcome to part two of our International Women's Day series. We welcome Claudette White, Chair of the Compliance, Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Claudette is with us today to discuss International Women's Day, Empowering Her, Inspiring Inclusion for Underrepresented Women. Claudette is a strong advocate and outspoken voice of diversity and inclusion. She works as a Senior Compliance Officer at JP Morgan Ireland. Claudette is Director and Chairperson of the Diversity and Inclusion Committee of the Compliance Institute. She has been championing DEI initiatives and raising awareness to collectively drive change in attitudes towards gender balance, identifying ways to progress equality. She is also particularly involved in underrepresented groups and their role in the corporate world, as well as learning their personal experiences that have shaped their journeys. Claudette has moderated various seminars and discussions involving senior leaders on career navigation, mentorship, and allyship within the industry. Furthermore, Claudette has served as a panel member at various DEI-focused events, where she provides perspective on fostering a sense of belonging to underrepresented groups, pushing to create greater equality for all. Born in South Africa and moving to Ireland in 2015, Claudette has made it her mission to open doors for people across various backgrounds and walks of life through mentoring, volunteering, raising awareness and raising her voice in combating discrimination on the grounds of age, race, ethnic origin, religion or lack of thereof, disability or sexual orientation. She was nominated in the Advocate of the Year category in Women in Finance Awards Ireland 2021. And nominated in Ireland's National Diversity and Inclusion Awards in 2023. In the Leader Emerging Leader category, she fosters a diverse and inclusive environment, allowing everyone to feel welcome, valued and represented. So Claudette, could you talk to us about what International Women's Day means to you and what we could do to inspire inclusion in the workplace?
Thanks, Jackie. So it is a very exciting time. This International Women's Day theme, Inspire Inclusion, provides an opportunity to amplify voices of women from all walks of life, including those facing intersecting forms of discrimination. It's a time and an opportunity to celebrate the social, economic, the cultural, and also political achievements of women while also advocating for gender equality. And so what sets International Women's Day apart in terms of inspiring inclusion is its focus on highlighting the achievements and the contributions of women from diverse backgrounds, including those who are marginalized and underrepresented. International Women's Day serves as a catalyst for actions as well as conversations aimed at addressing systematic barriers to gender equality and advancing inclusive policies and practices in various spheres, including the workplace, education, healthcare, as well as politics. We need to start by identifying what, you know, inclusion is. And to inspire inclusion in our everyday lives, we need to challenge the biases and stereotypes, and we need to treat everyone with respect and dignity. And together, we need to work to enhance systems and institutions to ensure that they are fair as well as inclusive. Ways in which we can inspire inclusion is to promote gender diversity. So we need to work towards actively hiring and recruiting women at all levels of the organization to ensure gender diversity in the workplace. We need to address bias and discrimination, as I just mentioned. So we need to implement policies and procedures to address gender bias and discrimination in hiring, promotion, as well as compensation. In terms of fostering an inclusive culture, what we need to do is we need to create a culture that values diversity and, you know, where we can make all employees feel respected, supported, and included, regardless of what their gender is. I think this is important for women. So in terms of flexible work arrangements, We need to work towards offering flexible work arrangements such as remote work, you know, or flexible working to accommodate the needs of women, especially those who are balancing work and caregiving responsibilities. And we should, you know, in terms of leadership opportunities, we need to encourage and support women who take on leadership roles within organizations and provide opportunities for them to participate in decision-making processes. Parental leave and family support, it's also important that we make parental leave and available and also offer support programs to help women balance work and family responsibilities. And we need to celebrate women. So we need to recognize and celebrate all the achievements and the contributions of women in the workplace in order to highlight their value and importance to any organization.
So Claudette, have you ever experienced imposter syndrome as a woman of color? And what has that experience been like for you?
Unfortunately, I have. So imposter syndrome is real. That self-doubt of intellect, skills, and accomplishments are real. I felt that my success and my accomplishments at some point or another weren't valid. Men are susceptible to developing this mindset, but it is more prevalent among women, especially women of color, and it is a constant struggle. What we need to do is we need to embrace positive self-talk. We need to accept positive feedback, and we need to reassure ourselves and people who are experiencing imposter syndrome that they do belong, that they are competent, and that they deserve each and every bit of their success. This International Women's Day, I want to remind all women to fearlessly ask for what you deserve. Too often in our careers, we approach opportunities with self-doubt. We hesitate to even put ourselves out there. The fear of no sets in and we almost self-reject ourselves. As I said, I've diminished myself countless times in my career. I avoided taking up space. I questioned my abilities and whipped up all sorts of reasons stakeholders wouldn't believe in me. So if you don't believe in yourself, why would anyone else? Why should anyone else? If you don't advocate for your ideas and if you won't fight for change, who will? The harsh truth about careers. People care when they see how much you care about your own cause. On realizing this, I started asking for opportunities and I got most of them. So my advice is, you know, be your own ally and then expect others to be one. It's not easy. I can tell you that. It's tiresome, but this is what will empower you to build your dream career. It is time to unleash yourself and find power in your own unique abilities. Don't be shy about promoting yourself. Don't be shy about showcasing your impact. I have faced several challenges on my way here, but each one of them has only strengthened me to make me the person that I am today, which is a thorough professional who knows exactly what she wants and someone who sets her eyes on a goal and does not lose sight of it unless it's achieved.
What is the importance of mentorship and sponsorship?
Mentors advocate for their mentees within their organizations, which help them gain visibility. They gain, you know, recognition and access to advancement opportunities. And this advocacy is especially important because there are individuals from, you know, different groups who may face barriers to advancement due to biases and stereotypes. And I also think that mentorship and sponsorship can help break down, you know, that systematic barriers by providing individuals with access to role models, you know, mentors, and sponsors who have achieved success in their fields. And I think also seeing someone who looks like them in a position of leadership can be empowering and inspiring, as well as motivating them to pursue their own career aspirations. And I think overall, it is just a good idea. Mentors serve as, you know, sounding boards. You know, you can speak to your mentor about career advice. You can talk to them about your career, ask them what to do and when to do it. I have had mentors along my journey, and I found that it was helpful. It is crucial in anyone's career, especially, you know, women who are really ambitious and want to excel within their careers.
What are your thoughts on allies, and how do they inspire inclusion?
Allyship plays a crucial role in inspiring inclusion because it involves individuals actively supporting and advocating for women. Allies use their privilege and their influence to amplify the voices of those who may not have the same opportunities to be heard, and ensure that their perspectives and experiences are acknowledged as well as valued. Allies speak out against discrimination, bias, and injustice when they witness it, whether it's in the workplace, within the community, or within the broader society. And by challenging harmful attitudes and behaviors, I think that allies help create a safer and more inclusive environment for everyone. In my experience, allies actively work to create inclusive spaces where people, especially women, can feel welcome, respected, and valued, regardless of their background or their identity. They advocate for inclusive policies, practices, and initiatives that also, you know, promote diversity, inclusion, and equity. And I suppose they seek to understand the experiences as well as the challenges faced by marginalized groups, developing empathy and compassion for their struggles. And it also, I think this in turn fosters a stronger connection and also stronger relationships across the diverse communities. Allies also recognize that inclusion requires addressing systematic barriers and also the inequalities. They advocate for changes in order to create equal opportunities for everyone. If you consider yourself a male ally, ask yourself, how many women have you opened up your network to? If you are a senior woman, ask yourself, are you sending the ladder down? How are you championing women of color, disabled women, and women from lower socioeconomic backgrounds?
How can we create a workplace that is inclusive and safe for all women?
So inclusion involves creating environments where all individuals feel valued, respected, supported, and where their perspectives and contributions are welcomed and embraced. It starts with us. We need to foster a culture of belonging. We need to create a culture where we feel valued, respected, and included. We need to create safe and inclusive spaces where women can be their authentic selves without fear of discrimination or judgment. Now, many of us have been subjected to workplace aggression, and many of us have witnessed colleagues being disparaged. We all have a responsibility in creating an inclusive, safe working world for all. So here's a few navigators for how we can show up as supportive allies. Know what to look out for. Words used, statements made, insults framed as banter. Speak up. Address hostility. Recenter the situation with organizational principles of workplace respect, values, and dignity at work. And reach out. When you witness disrespectful behavior, confirm to the colleague who was targeted. Let them know what happened was real and inappropriate. And if they choose to address it, you will be a supportive ally. Now, in my journey, I've been given the gift of advocates and allies. My circle of trust who unconditionally rally around and elevate me. These are people who have influenced my values and those who help me to always do the right thing. So this International Women's Day, I would like to acknowledge and celebrate them whilst I do my part to inspire inclusion.
I know that you are a woman from South African descent. I know that from practice, cooking your dishes take a lot longer than ours. I also know that you're a mom, and I just want to know how the balance works. How do you get that balance between work life and home life?
I think it is important that, you set clear goals for yourself. So what I've done is I've defined my career aspirations and I've identified the steps that I need to achieve them. And so having clarity about your objectives can help you prioritize your tasks, allocate your time more effectively. I also set my boundaries. I set my boundaries between my work as well as my personal life to prevent burnout and to maintain this already healthy balance that I have. So this might involve setting specific work hours, designating the workplace and unplugging from work-related tasks, during non-working hours. So, once I'm done with work, it's my time is devoted strictly to my kids. And then I think it's important to prioritize, your tasks. So identify, what's high priority, focus on completing them. And I think that this can help you stay organized and prevent you feeling overwhelmed by, this long to-do list. I also use time management techniques. So I mentioned prioritization, batching tasks together. And I don't just mean work tasks. I mean just everyday life tasks. And I set deadlines in order to make the most of my time so that I have more free time, whether it be for the kids or for myself. I also, if I can't do something, like I learn to delegate tasks that I can't do, and whether this is work again or in my personal life. So I feel that delegating helps free up time for the more important responsibilities and also activities. Another thing that I do is, and I think this is so important, is take breaks. Schedule regular breaks, whether it's throughout the day to rest and recharge, whether it's something that you do weekly, or monthly. And I believe that taking breaks can definitely improve productivity, creativity, and also like just overall well-being. And I think another thing is, and I think something that we, don't do enough as women is invest in self-care. So make time for yourself. And I do this. Like I make time for myself. I invest in self-care, make time for activities that promote your physical, mental, and emotional well-being. So, whether exercise is your thing, whether you have a certain hobby, spending time with loved one and relaxation techniques, I think that is so important. And, I think another thing is, communicate with your employer. So if you are feeling overwhelmed or struggling to balance work and life, have that, if you have, that relationship with your manager, communicate that to them. And I feel like all of these things have, helped me in my personal and work life as well. And, hopefully someone that's listening today, can, follow this. And it doesn't work for everyone, but this is what I do in order to maintain that balance for myself.
Thank you, Claudette White, for sharing your views on the topic. We are delighted now to introduce Peter Heshen, the Chief Risk Officer from Transformate Global Payments. Peter is an experienced risk and compliance professional with over 13 years' experience in payments and financial services. Several of those years have been spent as a subject matter expert and managerial roles within risk and in the compliance environment. Peter has been a people manager, mentor, and coach for over 9 years. His roles have included regular engagement with regulators, the building and development of core components of risk management frameworks, delivery of high business readiness, transformation, and remediation projects, as well as business as usual risk assurance and compliance monitoring activity. So, Peter, I know you as an ally, somebody who supports female team members in the workplace. Can you share some of your experiences in advocating for gender diversity and inclusion in the workplace?
First of all, I'll start off just by saying, I'm very honoured to be asked to talk to you here today, particularly in relation to diversity and inclusion. I do want to maybe just start off by giving a bit of background just about myself. I suppose the first thing, I would like to say just is, I don't really want to paint myself as something that I'm not here. I'm very happy to join this conversation because I'm somebody that you've said in the past, Jackie, has kind of supported you through your career. And, I'm very kind of flattered that you thought of me. But yeah, I'm not necessarily a kind of a radical kind of activist in this particular area, but I have reached the kind of level of seniority now where I would be seen by people within my own company and possibly within the industry as well as a leader. And as such, you know, it's extremely important that I'm kind of contributing to these conversations. So again, thanks for inviting me. I suppose in that line of thought, like, I don't know if I've ever really sat down and consciously thought to myself, okay, I'm going to actively treat certain people differently based on their experiences. I think the important thing for me is, you know, that you're listening to the people that see you as a leader. You're listening to the people that report into you and rely on you for leadership type decisions. And I think that's probably kind of the point, is that, you know, if you are in these kind of leadership positions, you don't necessarily need to be that prominent activist, but you just need to be conscious of how you're actually, the decisions that you make may indirectly or directly impact people beneath you and people that you work with. You know, and I think it's very important to recognize that there is no sort of one size fits all to your own approach, but just to be conscious again of those people that you work with. So in terms of my background, so I suppose my background, my family life would have been very male orientated, if you like. So I came from a family of four boys. I went to an all-boys school. Certainly as a young adult, or, you know, teenager, there's no way I had any understanding of the challenges that other genders would have faced at that time in my life. And professionally, it's been quite different. I've actually worked predominantly with women as I've worked through my career. So, you know, I think at one point, you know, working in a consultancy firm, I was actually the only male in the function. So very different from in a professional capacity as it was from an upbringing. But yeah, I mean, in terms of diversity and inclusion, I mean, I think it's just extremely important to understand your own ways of working to begin with. You know, I know kind of my background and my experience has influenced the way that I approach work and the decisions that I make. So I think it's only logical, really, that people from different backgrounds or from different experiences are going to have a different way of looking at things and different ways of working. So I think, to me, that's the primary consideration. You know, you have to understand that's how people approach work, and, you know, that their background will influence that. I mean, as I say, I've never probably sat down and really thought to myself, I'm going to actively treat this type of person differently to that type of person. I think it's very much about working with the person in front of you. Each individual person will have very different experiences, even if they've gone through similar experiences, they might have a different perception of that experience. I have a young family myself, but that obviously impacts me very differently to how it might impact, you know, women in the workplace, for example. So, I mean, I have, as a leader, you know, I have coached, I've mentored women in the workplace. I've represented women in relationship promotion discussions, and, you know, I've actively participated in focus groups that would be, generally speaking, broader than diversity and inclusion, but certainly diversity and inclusion would be being one of the topic areas within those focus groups. And, you know, probably I would say that, you know, I have worked for quite a lot of female line managers and female bosses. And I don't know if it's kind of fair to say that I've really experienced challenges in promoting or kind of encouraging women or mentoring women in that regard. But there's no doubt that there's specific obstacles that do exist for women. And, you know, there's certain things that women experience very differently from men. And I'm sure we'll cover some of those topics today.
Just for the second question, and I suppose it's something that I have experienced with yourself, but you tend to put team members outside their comfort zone and encourage them to take on new tasks, to have them to put their name on something, on a document, on a presentation. I've heard you use the key phrase, have your name known within the organization. I find this a very women-centric approach, that, you know, you kind of support us to move our forward, to put our name on a document. With what you've just said, I suppose that is your way with the entire team. But have you any other tips, I suppose, or things that people could use to push somebody forward or help them develop themselves in the role?
In my experience, I've been lucky enough that some of my employers have sort of put me through kind of like a coaching session, if you know what I mean. They've coached me on how to be a coach. So I have undergone sort of, or I've went through programs of mentorship whereby, you know, certain techniques or tactics were kind of explained to me as to how you get the best out of people, or how you would coach individuals underneath you. Any of these courses that you kind of go on, a lot of them would sort of emphasize the same key skills or same key approaches. I mean, listening is one of the things that would be highlighted in, you know, any of these kind of courses. I mean, you don't really know what somebody's going through unless you actively kind of listen to them. You can't assume that they're going through the same experiences that you're going through. And there's many sort of techniques that you can kind of develop in relation to how you can do that more effectively. You know, asking open questions and things like that. When you're sitting with the coachee in front of you, it's important to kind of get from them what are the key challenges that they're facing. Don't sort of pigeonhole them into sort of talking about certain areas. Just keep the questions quite open, keep the conversation quite open with them, keep the dialogue flowing. And, you know, be being as flexible as possible and as understanding as possible is another key thing. I mean, I think I said just previously, we can have the exact same experiences, but you perceive it to be very different. Or, you know, whatever's going on in your personal life may cause you to experience or to have a different approach to that experience, even though we're actually technically going through the same thing. So again, just having that dialogue with your coaches, I know in previous roles, perhaps maybe not necessarily in this one, people who would have had coaches or mentors have mentioned to me in the past that they've experienced very different level of coaching depending on who is actually delivering that coaching session. You know, some coaches or some mentors or managers will come on, just railroad the conversation. They'll say, okay, well, I think you need to develop here. I think you need to develop here. Go away and do it. Whereas actually, I think it's really important to understand, well, you know, what are the areas that you want to improve in? Where do you see your career going? And, you know, helping somebody actively work towards that. I mean, specifically in terms of kind of like guidance in relation to sort of female coaches, I have had one or two sort of women coaches in the past. It's hard to sort of speak about this really without kind of drifting into generalities, but I know a lot of women can kind of find difficulty in kind of speaking up and kind of voicing their own concerns, particularly when men in senior roles are in the room. You know, a lot of women, from my experience, and again, I know I'm sort of speaking in generalities, but a lot of women don't necessarily want to make themselves visible. I'm not entirely sure why. Maybe it's fear of men contradicting them, or, you know, maybe men are just more bossy or aggressive in meeting settings. I'm not quite sure what the reason for that is. But again, I found that in practice, you know, when you're communicating with your coaches, quite often what they just need is the opportunity or a little bit of responsibility that kind of helps them kind of build that skill set. And, you know, quite often when you give coaches, whether they're male or female, that little bit of responsibility or a task that brings that skill out of them, quite often you can see the skills. You can see their skills developing as they kind of step up that little level.
I was just going to say that it definitely sounds like you are celebrating those achievements and you're creating that opportunities for growth. You're leading by example and you are advocating for gender equality. And just to share a bit about my experience, you know, as a woman, my experience having mentors has been valuable and very empowering. My mentors have supported me throughout my career, you know, in terms of just being that person that you can go to when you're facing challenges or when you're setting career goals and also overcoming obstacles. And, you know, I've had mentors who have believed in me and my abilities. I mean, they've believed in me more than I believed in myself sometimes. And this can also, you know, boost your confidence as well as your self-esteem. And they've offered me guidance on, you know, just work-life balance, stress management, as well as self-care. And, you know, I can't emphasize, you know, the importance of allyship and mentorship.
Just to add on to that as well, Claudia, I mean, I'm not going to mention names or anything, but there's somebody quite close to me at the minute who is going through the process of, you know, they have to find a new job and they know they're sort of reviewing their own circumstances and their own skill set, and they don't know what to put down on their CV because it's very hard to self-reflect like that. So the importance of a coach that actually takes a vested interest in your development is quite significant. I mean, I don't want to sort of suggest that I'm a fantastic people manager or anything like that, but I would like to think anybody that I manage or coach does in some way think that I'm helping them. And as I say, that there is a massive difference really in having that person who actually shows a bit of an interest, because it is very difficult to do that yourself sometimes. To be able to identify your own skill set.
What motivated you to become an ally?
I don't think there was really a conscious decision on my part in any way, but, you know, coming from my male orientated sort of upbringing and then going into the workplace where you're just exposed to different people, you know, different ways of working. As I say, I always had thinking about it now, I think I always have very sort of compassionate and very supportive managers, the majority of whom were actually female. And I just, you know, I remember really valuing that little bit of sort of personal support throughout my career. I mean, there was definitely times throughout my career where something would have been going on in my personal life. I was very distracted. At those times, those managers did actually show me that little bit of compassion that just helped me through a difficult time. And I think, you know, as you progress throughout your career, you start to value you value those inputs and those supports that other people put in place for you. And you realize that as you progress through your career, you really need to put those supports in place for anybody that's looking to you for support. I think the primary consideration really for the support that you give people, or whether or not you push somebody forward, well, maybe push is the wrong word, but whether or not you suggest somebody moves forward for promotion, or whatever the case may be, should always be purely down to, ability, composure, how they actually go about their ways of working, how they interact with their other individuals within the team, how they can contribute to the company. Other considerations just aren't relevant. So, I mean, I suppose my approach has always been a very kind of factual approach. Are they good? Do they have the skill sets? And are they capable with, can they handle the pressure of moving forward, etc.? Whether, their gender or any other factor is totally, I wouldn't even say secondary, I'd say it's totally irrelevant.
Just looping back, Pete, there to your point on the person, doing their CV at the moment. We've had a huge discussion between webinar done by the Compliance Institute, and we did one as well on International Women's Day with Pat Business School. What we has kind of come across is women tend to, if they're not 100% fluent in something, they don't want to put it on their CV. Whereas if a man knows maybe 40, 60% of something, it goes down as something he's an expert in. Is this something, I suppose, as a leader or that you've encountered amongst team members, that women tend to shy away from things if they're not confident?
I would say in general, CV writing skills are not that common. People in general aren't very good at writing down what they're good at. There's definitely times where I'd see, CVs coming through. And yes, I mean, you can kind of tell when somebody's blagging it a little bit. I don't know if I've noticed a very discernible difference between men and women. I know just from personally talking to different people, the women in my life that I would know have expressed that they find it difficult to write CVs and things like that. When I receive a CV in for a role, I'm not necessarily sure I could discern that there's a big difference in quality between men and women. But yes, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that men would be maybe slightly more confident in putting down what they feel they're experts in. I'm sure I do that on a regular basis as well. But the key with writing a CV, I think, is, don't undersell. Just write down everything that you have actually, the skill sets that you believe you have, the experience that you have demonstrated throughout your career. And even if you write it down in a very straightforward, black and white kind of way, the process of writing it down should clarify in your mind what kind of experience and what kind of skill sets you have. If you saw another person with the experience that you have, what would you say about them? Process of writing a CV. They say that, if you're ever feeling down about yourself or if you're ever feeling a lack of confidence, you should write your CV, because the process of actually writing your CV, you're putting down in writing, okay, this is what I'm good at. You're kind of giving yourself a boost. Everything that I'm doing here, this is the experience that I've had. Look at how much I've done. Look at all the skills that I have. That process can be incredibly uplifting, I think, but people do tend to get lost in it by not being able to articulate exactly what it is that they've done in the past. But yeah, the key is don't undersell. Like, everything that you've done has led you to the position that you're in now. Even things like, speaking with senior management, regularly engaging with senior management, that's stakeholder management. That's all relevant sort of stuff and should never be undersold.
So on International Women's Day, the Central Bank of Ireland released the stat that in 2023, the percentage of women being put forward by firms for senior roles was just 32%. This is compared to only 16% in 2012. So although we can see, I suppose, a good improvement there, there's still a gap. And with that in mind, I just want to know, how do you feel that leadership in organisations can encourage women to leadership positions, especially in the male-dominated industries?
I think we need to understand, what is it that's stopping women from either being successful and getting through to these roles or from applying for those roles? I suppose there's probably a number of factors that potentially put candidates off those more senior roles, and some of them may disproportionately affect women. I mean, I think logically, I suppose the biggest factor, I suppose, moving into a leadership role, or what would be perceived to be one of the biggest factors, would be, that issue of work-life balance and lack of flexibility. I think it's been said before, not necessarily a comment that I'm making, but work-life balance can be a thing that actually disproportionately affects women. And again, I hope I'm not saying anything too controversial, but I think it's because even in this day and age, I think there is a tendency that women can sometimes be the primary caregivers within a lot of families, not necessarily always, but it just means that having that lack of flexibility, having a reduced work-life balance, can actually impact women with families more heavily than it would maybe impact males. A consequence then of taking that leadership role could be longer hours, less flexibility, etc. But maybe there's just not enough being done in terms of trying to identify what women are probably trying to tell us in terms of the supports that they need. I mean, I'm sort of conscious as a as a man, you know, speaking on women's issues, I probably don't know in a lot of cases. And it'd be sort of silly of me to pretend that I would know all the issues that would be impacting women. But the important thing is to listen. I mean, that's the key to understanding anything at the end of the day. You know, women know the factors that are putting them off. It's just a case of doing the analysis and bringing that to the fore. But yeah, I mean, there could be a lot of unconscious biases in place as well in relation to how those management roles are pitched. You know, there's certain wording used within job descriptions. It could be that the leadership team, as you mentioned, is male dominated, and for some reason that's put women off as well. You know, I think it's not the case in every industry, and it's not the case in every workplace that I've worked in. As I said previously, you know, I had a lot of female managers in my time, which I think has only benefited me in the long run. I think some companies are making improvements, some companies are getting certain things right, but obviously more needs to be done.
What strategies do you employ to ensure that women's voices are heard and valued in team discussions and decision-making processes?
I think you have to recognise the value of everyone's input. Yeah, I mean, different people have different communication techniques. You know, some people tend to be very quiet in a sort of a team discussion type format. And I think it's important just to be alert to sort of the different ways in which people express themselves. Like, quite often you can see somebody wants to say something, but they're just hesitant. So again, just being open to what's going on in the room or what's going on the video call, whatever the case may be. I think allowing people to speak on their own behalf is really important. There's a tendency, and I probably do it sometimes myself, but you know, there's a tendency to kind of, you know, maybe take what something that somebody has worked on and speak about it, even though they were the ones that were actually actioning the deliverable or whatever the case may be. So I think giving credit where credit is due is extremely important. You know, if you've worked on something, I want you to talk about it. There's no point in me talking about it because it wasn't me that did it. So another thing as well is, you know, bringing junior resources, again, women or men, onto calls to get that experience. I think it can be very daunting for junior resources when they think, oh, there's this really important meeting that's going on above my head and, you know, things are being discussed. I haven't a clue what's going on. And they probably imagine all sorts of really serious conversations are happening. But in reality, a lot of those conversations are kind of just working through stuff that we all already know. You might be talking about a process or, you know, policy, and bringing resources for who that conversation might be relevant onto the call, just so they can sit and listen, I think can help get rid of that kind of fear of rising up to kind of more senior roles. And yeah, just bringing the discussion back to key points that may have been skipped over. Happens quite a lot where you might be sitting on a call, somebody makes a really good point, but it gets skipped over and people move on and sort of forget about it. But actually, if that was, you know, just taking a mental note, recognizing, okay, that's an important point, we maybe need to come back to that. And then when the conversation might die down a little bit, then saying, okay, can we just revisit what we said previous? You know, Jackie might have a really good point about this. And inviting people into the conversation as much as possible. I think it's totally human nature that you might have a really good point, but you just don't want to be seen as saying something silly. So you stay quiet. And like, as we've mentioned, that does seem to be a bit more of an issue for women than it does for men. I'm not quite sure of the reasons why exactly, but that's what, you know, that's what women kind of have told me in the past. So yeah, making sure that just because somebody's quiet doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have something of value to say.
I don't know about you, Claudette, but I definitely go through mental role play in their meetings when, you know, you're like, oh, what if I say this? What if I have the wrong concept? And that's what's in my head rather than actually getting the question in my mouth out there. I think that's a female issue, I hope. And it's not just me.
And I also think that it's so important, and Pete mentioned this, to, you know, amplify women's voices, because we are so unsure of ourselves sometimes. You know, he also mentioned, you know, listen and learn, speak up against gender bias, educate yourself and stay informed and be an active ally. And I also just want to say, you know, allyship is showing up for those who are not in your immediate circle, showing up for those who don't look and speak like you. Allyship is also about advocating for those who don't benefit you. That is true allyship. And I can definitely hear, you know, just by, you know, the experiences shared that, you know, Pete is the definition of allyship. And that is so inspiring for me as a woman to know that there are people out there, you know, that do have a woman's back. That's really good. You know, well done on everything that you're doing for women.
Have you ever encountered challenges or obstacles in championing gender equality, and what have you done to address them, or what have you seen being done to address them?
Yeah, so this is a bit of a tricky one. You know, I've obviously had a little bit of a think about this one, but I think the biggest challenges to me, again, you know, this is just in my own personal experience, the biggest challenges for me probably lie beneath the surface or are slightly subconscious in a lot of ways. And that makes them kind of quite difficult to tackle. You know, I think there's a couple of major issues, you know, that potentially cause challenges. And one would be sort of, you know, the generational issue. I mean, diversity and inclusion is, as a concept, is relatively new. So some of, you know, some of the older generations, maybe not so much now, because, you know, millennials are all approaching 40 now. So generational issues in the past certainly have been a bit of a problem. I think, as I mentioned already, you know, women as parents and you know, taking on their roles within their families, and that's potentially another one that has a bit of an impact. A lot of companies, particularly the big companies, will have things like diversity and inclusion forums. They will have policies. They will have things like that, that on paper makes it look like they're doing everything that they can. In reality, it's kind of harder to embed that culture, really. As I was thinking about this conversation that we're going to have, there was a couple of kind of experiences that did pop out to me as I was kind of thinking through what I was going to talk about today. On three separate occasions, three different women have told me that they felt taking maternity leave or having children has impacted their chances of promotion. And I'd say that's without me asking. You know, if I went and started asking people, I don't know what that figure would be. I'm sure there'd be a large number of women have felt that. And there was another kind of example of that sort of demonstrates my point about the generational issue. In a previous role, I was coaching two junior members of staff. And those two junior members of staff were involved in a conversation with a senior manager at one point. The coachees told me that they were having this conversation, and the senior manager was talking to the coachee and was talking about, you know, career, what he wanted to do, et cetera, et cetera. The conversation moved on and he turned to the female coachee and he just started talking about the weather, what she was doing at the weekend, that sort of stuff. And you're just like, oh. So even the male coachee told me he felt uncomfortable. It was so obvious. So I think, you know, we can talk about, you know, how we have policies in place and we've got mechanisms in place, and that's all great. But there's still that cultural piece. I think we as leaders have a responsibility really to ensure that we promote that culture so that you don't have those awkward conversations in corridors where people are, you know, clearly feeling uncomfortable and don't know what to do about it. But yeah, definitely still work to be done on the cultural side of things. But, you know, hopefully we'll get there.
Diversity and inclusion should not be approached as a tick box exercise. It should be seen as a fundamental aspect of organizational culture and strategy, you know, aim to create inclusive environments. Yeah, and D&I initiatives should stem from a genuine commitment to creating this positive change.
Are there any actions or initiatives, if implemented, would promote a more inclusive and equitable workplace for all genders?
From my own experience, I mean, I've seen companies implement, you know, working groups, mentorship programs, flexible working arrangements, reviewing kind of hiring practices and the interview process. I mean, I don't know, maybe some women find being interviewed by, you know, a senior male representative of the firm, maybe that's putting them off a little bit. You know, maybe there could be more sympathetic interview kind of practices or processes put in place to help encourage women to, you know, to go for roles and even just to perform better in the interview. You know, pay transparency would be another key thing as well. So I thought actually one of the interesting ones to me, again, which because it would have impacted me if it was implemented here in Ireland, but and it's one that was introduced at a government level in Iceland, but that's equal maternity and paternity leave. Now, I know that might sound I'm sort of speaking selfishly or whatever, because, you know, I want to have longer paternity leave. But actually, you know, if maternity or parental leave is a factor by which companies, or whoever the case may be, can discriminate against women, then equaling the playing field is something that could actually benefit women and men. I think Iceland's approach is, you know, each parent has up to 6 months, and then there's a certain period that's transferable as well. But as I say, you know, if everybody had that parental leave, then you're not having people, women, feeling disadvantaged by having to take maternity leave, which of course, you know, is they're perfectly entitled to do. So yeah, I think there's lots of kind of things that we can do, and some of which, you know, have been rolled out in certain companies. I know some companies in Ireland have equal maternity and paternity leave, but I think there's maybe some more. You know, we can certainly look at other areas that we can introduce new initiatives as well.
Just to add to that, you've mentioned, you know, quite a few, you've covered that. And I've always had a passion for D&I. And I think it's because I understand some of the challenges that diverse women experience. But one thing that I would add is leadership accountability. So I think it's very important for, you know, we need to hold leaders and managers accountable for promoting gender equality and creating, you know, these inclusive workplaces. We need to provide training and guidance to leaders. You know, we need to provide this training so that they are able to recognize and mitigate unconscious bias they need to, you know, promote diversity, and they need to create equal opportunities for everyone.
What can be implemented to prevent potential unconscious bias in the workplace? How would you encourage others to do the same?
There's maybe sort of two sides to look at this from. So there's the sort of company level, but I think there's a, I think there's a personal approach as well. So look, from a company level, I mean, obviously firms would need to identify where their biases exist. So again, that's kind of going through an exercise to communicate with their employees to understand what they can be doing better in the diversity and inclusion space, and obviously in eliminating unconscious biases as well. Each decision that a company makes really needs to be put through proper sort of analysis exercise as well. You know, I think one at the moment, which is quite topical, is, you know, I think quite a few companies seem to be rolling back from the working from home options that they would have offered during COVID, etc. But that's something that could actually disproportionately impact women rather than men. So decisions like that, I think, you know, firms really need to be quite careful when they're making those kind of decisions, that they're actually considering it from every angle and considering the needs and the supports that their employees need. I think as well, companies definitely need to put in place mechanisms for calling out those unconscious biases. I mean, taking for example, you know, that coachee, you know, that had that uncomfortable conversation with, you know, a senior manager. I think it'd be a little bit maybe unrealistic or unfair to ask a junior resource to speak up in that scenario. You know, that coachee was probably not going to challenge the senior manager on their wording and their approach and the way that they were speaking to them, just because they're a junior resource, right? I mean, there's maybe 20 or 30 years age difference in between them. And of course, you know, just maybe not having that experience of speaking out, you wouldn't expect that person to call that out. However, if there was another mechanism, you know, maybe they can anonymously report behaviours or unconscious biases that they don't agree with or they've observed, that could really benefit the company as a whole. But I think on a personal level, we all just need to be conscious of our own reactions to different people and conscious of our own ways of communicating with different people. You know, observe how you communicate with people. Do you react differently to certain people? Why is that? Could you be accused of treating somebody differently, or is there a reason why you perhaps speak to somebody differently than you would somebody else? Challenge your own perceptions. You know, speak to people with different backgrounds, engage with people in your team or across your, you know, across your company to find out more about them, you know, and as I say, challenge your own perceptions. So, you know, all of these factors I think can kind of help promote a kind of a diversity and inclusion culture.
Also, interrupt bias in the moment. Encourage employees to speak up. And you did say this, people. Encourage employees to speak up and address bias when they observe it in the workplace. Provide resources and support, you know, for bystander intervention training, and help those, you know, empower individuals to interrupt biased behavior and to promote that inclusion. And I suppose also promote understanding. So try to facilitate opportunities for employees to learn about, you know, different cultures, backgrounds and perspectives. Like a few years ago, I started celebrating World Culture Day, which is, you know, celebrating all the different cultures. You know, I celebrate International Women's Day, Black History Month, International Men's Day. And, you know, I'm learning more as I go along. This helps promote empathy and, you know, understanding across the diverse groups.
Can you share with us any success stories or examples where support and mentorship have contributed to the professional growth or advancement of women within your organization?
Best example I can give of this is actually one that my fiance gave me, and she did take great delight in the irony of me asking for her opinion on this matter, by the way. But yes, she had a manager in her past who was extremely supportive. This was a male manager, and to the extent whereby actually he had a team that was majority women. I'm not quite sure of the exact numbers, but he was so supportive to, you know, my fiance still refers to him as kind of one of the best managers she ever has. You know, he's the yardstick by which she holds kind of all of her managers since. He was so successful that actually I think two of his direct reports, they were both female, both with young families, have actually been promoted above him in the last sort of couple of years. I suppose it sort of ties back to what I was saying earlier. Yeah, so opportunities for advancement should always be kind of driven by people's performance. So that's, to me, that's the primary reason why you would put forward anybody for promotion or for, you know, for furtherance in their career. You know, part of that is that we just need to be cognizant of the different types of support that those employees need. You know, we all have different nationalities, genders, cultures, physical abilities, whatever the case may be. But at the end of the day, you know, a good employee should should be rewarded with the opportunity to develop.
You work for an organization that's female led.
To be fair, yes. I mean, my current, the organization I work in currently has a female CEO. My previous role, the partner that I worked for was female. So yeah, I mean, plenty of sort of success stories out there and hopefully plenty more to come, hopefully as well.
Sinead's a champion. She manages a family and is the CEO of a fantastic global unicorn fintech, Transformate.
So, like, I use my own career journey as an example. Mentors have played such a pivotal role in my career journey. They provided me with support, invaluable guidance, you know, just and that encouragement that have helped me overcome the obstacles along the way. Like, I've had really, really supportive managers, you know, who have helped me on my journey. But I also just want to, for the women who don't have mentors, you know, it's not easy. And I just want to say that you can advance, you know, your career, you know, setting clear goals, investing in yourself, building a strong network, speaking up and asserting yourself, you know, always seeking feedback and taking risks. Because I don't think that we do that enough. So for those who, you know, don't have mentors, you know, you can do it on your own as well.
Yeah, I think I always remember when I was starting out in my career, I always remember managers used to say to me, I think the phrase was, you know, take responsibility for your own development. At the time, it used to kind of annoy me because I was kind of like, you know, well, I don't know how to develop my career, you know. But as I've gotten more senior, I have realized that, you know, the moment that you start taking that responsibility and saying, okay, well, I want to go in this direction. I want my career to end up in a certain location. You know, I'm going to actively take the steps and take the risks, as Claudette mentioned, to get me there. And that's when things started to happen in my career personally. And it's fantastic advice. You know, nobody's going to walk up to you and hand you the role that you want. You have to actively make steps to go and get it.
It's important for women to celebrate other women as well. So International Women's Day, it's an opportunity for us to celebrate all women from all walks of life. It's a time to lift each other up, embrace the diversity of thought that we bring to the table. But it's also important that we progress within our own careers. You know, we pay it forward and then we support others to do the same. And we need to remember that we are amazing and we need to see our differences as a strength. And we need to use this to progress our careers.
I think it's important, Claudette, when we're talking about mentorship, that people realise that there is a new mentorship programme being set up by the Compliance Institute and that members do have that opportunity to reach out to people in areas that they have specific interest to help their career, help their goals and get pointers in the directions they need to take to get there. Be they men, women, starting off in their early career or even want to just advance some of the later stages of their career, there's people there to reach out to help them. And I think it's a really good initiative to help women move forward as well.
Absolutely, I agree. And I think about my own journey, you know, moving here from South Africa and, you know, not having the tools that I needed at that stage. And so I think this is an amazing initiative to help those women, you know, who are just starting, you know, starting off in their career, you know, not knowing, you know, what career decisions they need to make and needing that support. So absolutely, this is amazing.
Thank you to you, the listener, for listening to the Compliance Files podcast brought to you by the Compliance Institute. I do hope that you found the podcast interesting and useful. We would be very grateful if you would review and rate this podcast. Until then, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Compliance Files. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you are listening to ensure you don't miss out on future episodes.